There's something I was going to tell you here. Episode 75, right?
Yep.
Oh boy.
That feels like a milestone.
It's not even a round number. Okay. You edit most of these podcasts, right?
Yeah. Almost all of them, I'd say.
I think there's several, like one, two.
Yeah, I think two.
Well, you know how I talk too fast?
I've noticed that one.
And how you have to like slow down all the podcasts.
I don't do that.
In post.
Yes.
Wait, what? This is going to be a much slower show for me because I was unable to get coffee today.
That's a problem.
Well, not today.
Wait,
I had like coffee today. I had coffee today, just okay. To be clear.
Yeah, I was worried.
But I was heading over here and I was going to get some coffee and I can't roll down my windows because I got tint put on my car windows. And so I was like, oh, I'm just going to pick up coffee on my way over to Daniel's to do some podcasting. And I like get to the coffee shop and I'm about to turn in and I go, oh no, wait, I can't roll down my window.
I don't know why you didn't just open the door.
So I'm not
just
crazy.
Pull up and open the door.
They would close the window. They would think I was going to attack them. But why is that guy coming at us deranged? Like he parked 3 feet back. And he's like, open the door. And now he's like lumbering towards us. Coffee.
Looming over them.
Yeah. Just Americano. Like, is he trying to speak Spanish? Italian? What's happening?
Welcome back to the Camera Gear Podcast. I'm Daniel.
And I'm Lucas.
And we're here today to talk about the gear, software, and techniques we use to shoot photos and video.
Did we talk about Wes Anderson on this podcast previously?
I feel like we may have mentioned him once or twice.
I think I talked about that Asteroid City movie.
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
I went back and I watched The Royal Tenenbaums.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever seen that.
I've heard of it.
There was a part where what's Owen Wilson's brother's name? Something Wilson?
I don't know. You're on your own on this one.
You're just like waiting. See if I'm going to get it. Anyway, whatever. He was a photographer in that movie. And there's a point where they're like introducing him as a photographer. And so he like picks up his camera and like takes a picture. And it was a Rolly 35.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw it and I was like, that's a Rolly 35. Nailed it.
Yep.
In one.
I don't think you would have been able to answer that 3 weeks ago.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I was just really proud of myself.
It's impressive.
I felt like a camera podcaster.
Yep. Yep.
Clocked it. I was nice. Like, yeah, I'm watching a movie where a guy took a picture with a film camera and they filmed it in like, I think the movie was like 2005 or 2007, whatever.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you see the Potato Jet video recently where he went to Japan and shot on film?
No.
You need to watch that. It's basically this podcast over the past 6 months, but a YouTube video. Because he goes to Japan and buys his first film camera and buys a bunch of film and shoots it.
That's the dream.
Yep. And he was blasting through those rolls of film. I don't know how long he was in Japan, but it seemed like he was going through like more than a roll a day. And I
That's
feel
impressive.
Like you take weeks to go through one. He was just shooting like crazy.
That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, there's later versions of like film cameras, like modern film cameras, like certain like EOS, you know, EF mount type. Those things will shoot like 3, 4, 7 frames per second.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. I can't even conceive it.
Yeah.
Like you hold down the shutter and it has to move the film,
mm-hmm.
take the picture, and then move the film again.
It seems like the camera would have like recoil at that point. You'd get like torque steer from it or something from the motor moving that.
Like does it stop? Like, do you get motion blur from the the film itself rolling through the camera?
Oh, interesting. That's crazy.
Yeah. It's nuts. I just can't figure it out. Like, with 1 second, 7 frames.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to move the frame.
Yeah, the moving part's what makes that crazy. I mean, obviously, there's plenty of digital cameras that can go faster than that, but having to move the film makes it a whole new challenge.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, crazy.
All right, what's the first thing that we're actually supposed to talk about here?
So we shot an event a few weeks ago, and you know, we've shot a lot of events like this, and we did most of the things the way we normally do, but there are a couple of things I thought were kind of interesting about it. So one was that we used the X-T3 on the gimbal.
We've done that a few times.
Yeah, we've done that before. It was the first time I really used it
I guess that's true. Normally I run the Google.
And I thought that was interesting. It was surprisingly lightweight compared to, so normally what I've done when I've used the gimbal is put my XH2S on there and I leave it in the cage because I don't want to take the cage off every time. And I don't know what lens. I guess I've normally used the Tamron 17-70.
Yeah, probably because you want to get something a little wider.
Yeah. And so I was using the X-T3, no cage, with the 16 prime.
And you didn't even have any like accoutrement. You didn't have the extra like handle thing to hold it with two hands. You didn't have an extra monitor or nothing. Yep.
And I think honestly, not having the monitor made as much of a difference in my experience as anything. But
yeah,
I was so much happier with that setup. I just manual focused it.
Sure. Yeah,
it was wide lens. So I just manual focused it about 5 feet away and just walked around like that. And it was so much easier to handle, you know, going through a crowd of people. I didn't have this big bulky setup or big monitor or anything. And so it was a little bit more maneuverable and the camera was a lot lighter and it all worked really well.
Sometimes I think that when running a gimbal, it just makes sense to zone focus.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's a popular opinion and like maybe all the pro gimbal people and like that's just what they do, like steady cameras and whatever. But I feel like for me, I'm going to probably shoot wide. I'm going to shoot the full frame equivalent of like 24 to 35 millimeter, maybe 20 millimeter.
Yeah.
Like you were using this Fujifilm 16 mil. So probably that range. And like you can, even if you're shooting really wide open, like, you can focus at 3 to 10 feet at a decent aperture, like 2.8 or something. And like, that is good. Mm-hmm. You're good, right? And you can kind of, you can gauge it. Like you can look out ahead of you and be like, yeah, that's like 7 feet. I'm basically in focus.
Yeah.
And like, it just works. Maybe it's because I don't have like Sony level autofocus in my life. And I'm just not on that level and whatever. But to me, it's just kind of easier, especially with those. Like if you have a lens that has good manual focus on it,
yeah.
I mean, you can reach up and just be like, scoot. All right, let's go.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the other advantage to the X-T3 is that the manual controls definitely do help with, if you want to adjust a setting, you're just reaching up to hit a dial. It's a little simpler.
I have enjoyed that with using the X-T3 for that video thing. Cause it's like, if I'm going to start tweaking exposure because I'm shooting it all manually, I'll just reach up and like boom, boom, boom on the ISO dial.
Mm-hmm.
It's just super, super easy. And you're not having to like press buttons or try to grab the grip to start like turning the thumb wheel or the right wheel. It feels like it's the kind of like the perfect solution for shooting with a gimbal.
Yeah. And it's 4K 60. So that's a plus. I mean, just overall, it kind of made me feel like having an extra small camera to run on the gimbal is honestly kind of better than trying to use my normal video setup and adapting it to the gimbal. I mean, that's a privileged position that, got multiple cameras. I mean, we could make it work with just the one, but it was so nice using that. I like that setup.
Yeah, I'm into it too.
Yep. So that was the first thing. And then the other thing that kind of stood out to me was some of the drone stuff. So I brought the Mavic. I have a Mavic Air 2S and I brought that and got some various shots at some of the parts of the event. And people were really into it. I had people coming up to me while I was doing it, asking me about it and interested in it. And then even watching the video later, it seemed like that was one of the things that people mentioned about it was, oh, that's a cool drone shot. And I just thought it was interesting because some of our previous drone discussions, we've kind of felt like drone stuff is overdone and it's not as, compelling maybe as it used to be. And I think that may be a perspective we have from watching YouTube videos, but I don't think regular people are that way. And it still seems like people are really excited by drone footage and I think it goes a long way toward making things like event videos more interesting and seem like a higher production value.
Yeah, it's nice having, an establishing shot or a few kind of like big, far away, like aerial. It adds that extra tanache, pizzazz to your video or your highlight reel or whatever. Like kind of it just feels like where I've landed on drones right now hasn't changed, even coming out of that event. And it's which is having those drone shots, if you can get like 1, 2, 3 really good, 5 seconds of movement, maybe a parallax effect, like a nice drone shot, and you like pepper those in or you start and end with one. I mean, adds a lot to the video and it feels pretty critical for a lot of like the recap stuff that we do. But otherwise, like it's boring.
Yeah. Like,
the drones just with the yearly releases, it just feels like the sensors have become commoditized, and it's all these like, here's your half inch or 1 inch sensor and it's quad bear and whatever. And like, basically it's like the same thing, and the footage isn't getting like monumentally better.
Yeah.
And like, they can all do the thing and it's fine. And they're just not as exciting as it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not exciting to talk about for sure.
Right. But like, it's one of those things where it's like, we have to have it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're going to go out there and sell, and I was going, we're going to sell a service for, you know, here's a recap thing, or here's a real estate thing, or like, we'll do this video for your event, man, going to want a drone shot.
Yeah.
Like, going to have to have the drone shot. And so it's not like where you can ignore it, and you kind of have to stay on top of like what's cool and what's modern. I mean, you were talking about how like with your drone, you're starting to really feel the need for those like side collision detection.
Yeah, that seems like it would be really helpful for some of this stuff. Because I mean, you know, every time you fly the drone, you do a, you know the area, or you scope out the area before you fly, you know. So I mean, it's not necessarily that there are things that you're not aware of, but I just find that a lot of times I'm trying to track somebody or orbit around something, and I end up having to stop the shot early because I can't quite remember where a certain obstacle was, and I certainly don't want to hit anything.
Yeah, you don't want to crash your drone. You don't want to like have the drone fall out of the sky on someone.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of like safety concerns around that whole thing.
Yeah, and so I am kind of wishing I had that, because the air doesn't only has forward and down maybe, but it doesn't have side or back.
With the stuff you've been capturing recently with the drone, do you feel like you've been maybe missing having a tighter lens? Those extra telephoto options seem to be really what DJI has been pushing recently.
Yeah, the Air 3 and the Mavic 3 both have that. And I do wish I had that, because, you know, wide shots can be cool for the establishing stuff. But the other cool use of drone footage is, you know, if a single person is doing a thing and you want to get a shot of that from the air, just 'cause it's a unique perspective. And a couple times I found myself flying pretty low, you know, I'm like 10 feet off the ground, so that I can get closer to the action and get something that's going to fill the frame a little bit more. But then there's more obstacles close to the ground, and it's going to make the drone louder. So maybe you're disrupting something. And so, yeah, when I get another one, I definitely want something that has a tighter lens.
So you're saying that your 3-year-old drone is finally getting to the point where it's like, maybe it's just swap it up.
Yeah, it's getting there. It still feels pretty competitive in terms of image quality with modern stuff. I mean, the biggest thing it's lacking, I guess, is not being able to shoot in, you know, like a ProRes codec and not having the telephoto. It's still pretty capable, but yeah, it's, you know, at 3 years, it's finally getting there.
Well,
like
yours has actual D-log still, right? Or did you do the update that removed it?
I can't remember if I've done the update or not, but you know, if I was to update the firmware, it definitely would not have D-Log. It's D-Log M.
Ugh, isn't there D-Log M and then there's like D-Cine-like, or am I mixing that up with something else?
I think, I think those are both choices. Yeah.
They're both terrible choices.
Yeah.
And it's annoying that you have to go all the way up to like their most pro Mavic versions in order to get actual log.
Yeah, it is.
It's like, come on, guys. Come on, just give me a log. The whole like D-Log M thing is stupid.
It is.
Like, I don't even know if it's Rec 709.
Yeah.
There's no information. It's not published.
Just have a normal profile for people that don't want to do grading, and then have a log profile for people who do want to do grading.
Yeah. Don't give me like this, a really, really extra super flat, what am I doing with this? Like, I can't even transform a type profile.
Yeah.
People are just going to post in the flat profile, Daniel.
Of course they are.
It's making the problem worse.
Yep. I mean, it just doesn't... That's a silly feature to paywall, honestly. I mean, GoPro, you know, you can buy a $400 GoPro and that has log.
Mm-hmm. It's like, man, I just really want that ungraded log look without shooting in log. If only there was a way that I didn't have to, like, every time I shoot in Rec 709, I got to go in and lift the shadows and crunch the highlights and turn the saturation all the way down. And it's just so hard. What if I could just shoot in fake log all the time?
It's literally what it feels like.
Okay. Well, I don't know if I have any other takeaways from this event. I think I shot most of the thing with my whole cage setup, which has been working out really well.
That's good.
I feel like I've talked to this before, but I finally got everything set up in a way that I got the screen closed on the back of the camera, and I'm using an external monitor, and like, it's basically working.
Nice.
And I've just been happy with it. But
yeah. Did you use the dummy battery this time?
Yes, I did. You bought me for my birthday?
I think so.
Power Junkie version 2, mm-hmm. which is an NPF battery plate that has a barrel jack output and a USB-C output. It's different from the version 1, which had USB-A, micro USB, a barrel jack, and had two USB-As. Yeah, because like you could charge it with a micro USB and then a barrel jack and two USB-A. So this one's like a little different. It has less ports, but I guess you can kind of maybe like split the port or something. And it sits differently. It sits like, has a, like a flush, like a flat mount. And mm-hmm. so I was using that, and you can actually like hold the button and like power the whole system on and off. And I have a barrel jack to, what is it? I guess it would be another NPF plate, like a fake, like a dummy battery for NPF to power my small HD.
Okay. Yeah.
And so like that was the whole like power rig that I had mm-hmm. set up to dummy battery out to the camera, dummy battery out to the monitor, and then another one to power. What was the third thing I powered? Maybe I only powered those two things.
Yeah. So you ended up with a single NPF battery powering all that.
Yep.
And how was your battery life like?
It worked out pretty good. I had 970, and I think that I shot for like 3 hours, and I was like 40% left on the battery.
That's pretty good.
It is, because... And I think it's because I have, those are actually good NPF batteries. I have some like bad knockoff NPF batteries mm-hmm. and I have 540s that I can only shoot like 20 minutes and then they die.
Yeah.
And so you kind of have to be a little careful about the batteries that you're mm-hmm. using.
Yeah. It's funny that you've made it this far without getting into V-mount.
It's just so expensive.
It is.
Like I really, really want V-mount batteries because like my light will take V-mount. Mm-hmm. If I could get like a really big, decent V-mount, man, I could run my Godox light for whatever, like an hour.
Yeah.
Awesome. And that light, that battery would cost me like $100 to $700.
Pretty much. Yeah.
And I just like, man, I still can't get to the point, like with all the stuff that we do, I still can't get to the point where I'm like, I think we're going to spend $250 on a battery.
It's hard whenever the NPF, so you can get an NPF 970 for like $40.
Yeah.
It makes it hard to pay $300 for a V-mount.
The only time I've spent that much money on a battery was for my car.
yeah and well, I'm glad your rig's working.
Yeah it's working. So, I mean, I don't know, not really anything else out of that. I really enjoy whenever there's like a lot of people and I'm getting shots. I like doing a lot of like long telephoto stuff, like shoot with the equivalent of like a 70 to 200.
Yeah.
Or get some like really low depth of field, like 85 millimeter stuff that all looks like really good and like creamy backgrounds. But I also really like getting some like super wide shots, and I've started doing that more recently. And that's a lot easier with like a rig with a handle where you slap for the Fuji system, I'll slap the 16 millimeter on there. I'll do like the 16 and I'll just get like right up in people's faces.
Yep.
And I mean, yeah, you know, I'm shooting like a foot or two from them.
Yeah.
And so you get these like big wide opening background looks, and I think those are really fun.
Yeah.
And so I shot a lot of stuff like that.
And depending on the situation, you know, this was like middle and high school students.
Yeah.
They're all into being filmed. They love it.
Oh my gosh. They're like, yeah, no, me next. Woo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Post this to my TikTok. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I don't think you know how this works.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think that I haven't done as much of like the wide angle stuff in the past. And I found recently in the last two things that we shot that those have been really, really fun and energetic compared to some of the more traditional, like kind of a lot of layering. Because mm-hmm. I do like that too. I do like doing shots where it's like you have the foreground, mid-round, background, and you kind of maybe like plan those movements against each other and get those kind of shots. But sometimes the wide ones are really, really fun.
It's kind of cool to have some of both, because maybe throughout the video you change the energy a little bit.
Yeah,
by what
definitely.
Shots you're using.
Yeah, it's all kind of like, what are you going for, and like what are you filming, and mm-hmm. you know, doing photography.
Yep.
Or videography, I guess. So that was all video.
You know, we've shot a lot of events at this point, and I feel like we do learn something every time we do it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Doesn't matter how many times you do it, you're never an expert.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you are, but, you know, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
You always have more to learn. So
definitely.
Yep.
Okay. I got something else for you before we get to this. Is that our main topic? I don't know what our main topic is. There's a lot of cool stuff in here. There's like two more cool stuffs. Have you seen this new Sony lens?
I've seen people talking about it, but I don't know why it's exciting.
It's not exciting. I put it on here because I'm like, what the heck is this? Why? Why does this exist, Daniel?
Let's start by, what is it?
Okay, Sony released a new standard zoom, mm-hmm. and it's their they're cheaper Zoom, right? And I mean, they came out last year. They have the 24-72 G Master lens, and it's like a $2,400 standard Zoom. And like, it's the bee's knees. The first version of that was not very good. And it was like, just buy the Sigma because the Sony one's kind of trash. But the new G Master is better than the Sigma. It's just more expensive. It's like $700 more expensive. And so if you're in Sony, it's like, you want the best of the best standard Zoom, like get the G Master 2. But maybe they felt like they needed like a cheaper option. They still sell the G Master 1. You can buy the thing for like $1,700. But now for $1,100, you can buy this 24-50 f/2.8 G lens.
It's a really weird focal length for full frame.
That's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't understand. I get like Fuji's talking about coming out with this new like kit lens, and they're like, okay, it's going to be 16-50 instead of 18-55. I get it, right? Like, you know, you moved it around or whatever. They're not changed on low end. It's like 24-50. And I think like, it's obviously because they want it to be small, light, and cheap.
Yeah.
It's a G, not a G Master. So it's just kind of like their standard quality. And it's about as good as that G Master Mark I that I was talking about like 35 seconds ago. It's like short. It's like 3 inches whenever it's closed. And then it'll open up to like 3.5 inches whenever you zoom it in.
What do you mean by that?
I think I might be mixing this up with the other lens, but I'm pretty sure this lens, when you're at 50 millimeter, it's 3 inches. And when you're at 24 millimeters, it's 3.5 inches.
That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that would be the case, but okay.
I mean, maybe there's a 75% chance I'm wrong about that, but I think that's the case here.
Interesting.
But still, it's really short, shorter than a 17-70.
Well, every lens is shorter than a 17-70.
Well, not every lens. Yeah. I mean, there is that like 1200 millimeter 5.6 that Canon made back in the day.
Okay.
That one's the same length, actually. Never mind.
Yeah.
I take it back.
I don't know. I mean, it has to be because it's small and light. I don't know how the weight of this compares to other options, but, and I mean, I don't know. You need cheap lens options, right? Not everybody wants to pay $2,000 for a lens. So maybe it's just that.
Yeah, I guess so. It's cool that it's small. It just feels weird. Like, why not take it to 70? I don't know too many full-frame lenses that just, like, I mean, we're going to be 24 to 50.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a very good range. It's really short. If you look at the other options, I mean, you can buy for the same price the Sigma 24-70 Art. And that is a very, very good lens.
Yeah, I mean, that would probably be the right choice.
It's twice as heavy. It's 835 grams instead of 440 grams. It's almost twice the weight.
Yeah,
it's like 1.5 pounds.
So maybe that's
2 pounds.
Maybe that's the reason.
Yeah, so maybe not. Like, if you care about the weight, so like maybe you're not looking at the 24-70 Art. The other options maybe aren't as wide. And like, perhaps this is the argument. Like, Sony's going at her looking at the Sigma 28-70 and the Tamron 28-75.
Mm-hmm.
These are both 2.8 zooms, and they're both 450 to 550 grams, and they're both about 4 inches long, right? So a lot smaller, lighter of a lens. The Sigma 28-70 is $750, and the Tamron 28-75 is $900.
Okay, so those are even cheaper than this one.
Yeah, so like cheap, light, third-party lenses. So maybe like what Sony's thinking is, we're going to come in here, we're going to compete with those two lenses because we don't have a first party option. Let's make ours way wider at 24 instead of 28 at the sacrifice of dropping off the long end, which is kind of the same thing Fuji just did with their 16-50.
Yeah, it sort of is. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I mean, I feel like if you're Sony, just let the third party manufacturers handle that cheaper end and then stick to your really expensive, really good lenses. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a strange decision.
I mean, some people just want the Sony lens. They want the breathing compensation support and et cetera, et cetera. This one has like a clicked aperture on it. You can like de-click the aperture. It's like,
okay.
I don't know. It's got all the features,
yep.
I guess. It was such a head scratcher that I wanted to put it on the list here because
strange.
I don't know. Like, I feel like the more I talk about it, the more I can be like, yeah, you know, like you can kind of justify why this thing exists, but I still don't know who it's for.
Yeah, it's weird to be in a situation where a new lens comes out and you're just kind of not excited about the idea. I don't know.
I would pick the Sigma 28-70 or 24-70 over this. And both of those are the 24 to 70 is the same price, and then 20 to 70 is like way cheaper.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, not as portable, but still.
I mean, you're shooting full frame.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yep.
If you want portable, go shoot APS-C. Maybe that's the trick. You get an A6700. I could not get that word out. I was like, A7000? No. Get an A6700. Put this on there.
Yeah.
Also really weird. That's like cut out for the crop. You're talking like 35 to 75.
That is weird. That doesn't make sense as a range either.
Yeah. No, it's weird. It's a full frame lens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, at that point, you would just get a 17 to 70 because that's 2.8. It's probably just as good. And it's like, it's wider and longer. And cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're on APS-C.
But then you have a lens that's like 17 inches long. You have like having to have three hands to hold it.
Yeah. I feel like I saw some of the YouTubers excited about the Sony lens, but they also get excited about everything. So,
man, I haven't show me those videos. Every video, every like video and review I've seen on the 24 to 50 is like, I don't know, weird. It exists, I guess. Street photography.
This is another lens in Sony's lineup.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on.
Okay. We got an email from Brad, and he wanted to know about camera options. And so I was like, sweet, cameras.
This is something we know about.
Finally, somebody wants to know about cameras. Ugh. Anyways, so he's explaining his whole situation here. He's like 50-50 photo video, and he's looking for something that he can shoot uncropped 4K 60. And like, he's not brand loyal. He's not, you know, it doesn't matter what he's coming from. He's looking for, he wants a hybrid mirrorless camera that can shoot 4K 60, but he doesn't want to crop. And I'm assuming that's because like, maybe he's mixing footage. Maybe he's shooting some 4K 30, 4K 24, and he's mixing in the 60. Sure. And he doesn't want to have to deal with the crop whenever you move the camera. Or maybe he just like really wants to like take advantage of that full width.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. I mean, I don't like having to deal with those crop modes either. And, you know, you get a lens that you are used to looking a certain way. And then if you have a camera that crops, then suddenly it starts looking different whenever you shoot in different modes. And so I get it.
It just occurred to me that I don't know if I looked up an FX30 for this. I think that one crops in. Yeah. Anyways. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I feel like for the things that I've shoot and the stuff that I use cameras for, it's like, I just kind of deal with it.
Yeah.
Like maybe like you've like 20 millimeter lens, you don't want to have to deal with it being like way closer.
I mean, not all crops are created equal, right? I mean,
that's very true.
Wheat is very different than corn, right?
Well, yeah, sure.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they're both crops. Anyway.
Oh, get egg. Stop it. Get out of here.
But I mean, you know, if it's a 1.1 times crop,
I'm like half reading, half listening to you. You throw that on me. Come on.
I mean, if it's a 1.1 times crop, then sure. Like that anybody should be able to deal with that. But I mean, sometimes some of these cameras, it's like if you shoot 4K 60, it's a 1.4 crop, and that's substantial.
I'm still looking to see if an FX30 has a 4K 60 crop because I don't know if I put that one on my list. It doesn't, right?
I don't know if it does or not.
The FX30 is such a weird camera because it feels like it crops in every mode. It's like this one's 1.1, this one's like 1.8. Anyways, whatever. I have an actual list here, Daniel. So don't just, we're just going to ignore that one for now.
All right.
Okay. So.
Oh, you know what? The FX30 wouldn't be a good choice if he's 50-50 photo and video.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's why I didn't put it on there.
Yeah.
Because it's any of the FX. Yeah. Those are mostly.
Yeah. It is very video focused.
Yeah, it is.
So. All right. Continue.
But yeah, to your point, like some cameras will, like you're cropping for 4K 60 because it can't do oversampled. It has to cut out a 4K image for 1-to-1 pixel. And like, that's the whole reason it's cropping is like, it can't oversample the image. Let's bring it down to 1-to-1 and whatever that is. So if you have like an 8K sensor camera, that crop is going to be insane versus like a 24 megapixel sensor, which is, you know, like 6K right about. And so, you know, maybe that'll be less of a crop. So like, that's kind of the main thing. So like, whenever we're talking about 4K 60, it's like, you really need it to read fast.
Yeah.
And then the other thing of like, okay, so you have a camera that can read fast enough. Not all 4K 60 is created equal. Like some 4K 60 is a little bit of garbage and some is not so much. Cause like you kind of have to make sacrifices because you're like, you're sucking so much data off the sensor to shoot out a 4K 60. Like, some of the things I'm looking at whenever I was looking through, like, okay, like what out there is on the market that would make what Brad's looking for. And it's like codecs, right? If you're shooting 4K 60, most cameras are going to drop off. Like, some will do like 4.20 8-bit, maybe some will do 10-bit, but still 4.20. It's hard to find one that'll do like 4.22 10-bit, or like ProRes, or, you know, a higher, more like better color fidelity type codec.
Yeah.
And so it's like, what are you sacrificing whenever you jump to 4K 60, if anything? And so it's like, there may be cameras that whenever they shoot like 4K 60, you're better off with the cropped version if you care more about image quality. Like, if you care about like the width of the sensor and not having to deal with the lenses and that sort of thing, maybe it's fine. But I think like if you grabbed like an X-T4 and you're shooting 4.22 10-bit 4K 60 at a 1.5 crop, you're probably going to have a better image than if you're shooting something that's like, I mean, this is a prime example, but like a Lumix S5 Mark II is shooting at 4.20 10-bit for,
yeah.
And so like, it's going to be a worse codec.
It's a trade-off for sure.
Yeah, it is. And so like, that's probably a bad example because the Lumix shoots amazing footage, but it's kind of like what I'm talking about is like, there are cameras that will do 4K 60 and they crop in, but you get a much better image if you're going to be doing something with it in post.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, you have to know what you're getting into once you start like pushing the ragged edges of what these cameras can do. And the number of cameras that can do like actual 4K 60 is like not cropped, it's like really small. It's a super short list.
Interesting.
And so we're interested to talk about every single one of them.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah. What else was I supposed to, there was other considerations on here. Oh, did we talk about bend and line skipping? We talked about how like oversampled versus not when you're shooting 4K 60, but we were talking about that for like cropping in, right? So all these cameras, none of them crop. These are going to be full width 4K 60, but some of them will oversample the entire sensor. So say you got a 6K sensor, they'll take all those pixels and they'll oversample it and then bring it down to a 4K image, like more data, more light.
Mm-hmm. Usually get a better result doing that.
Sure. Yeah. Some of them are going to line skip. They're just going to say every other line or every third line or whatever, and then just not shoot the full resolution of the sensor, mm-hmm. but you still are going to shoot like the full width of the sensor. And so, you know, like, or, and then some of them may like bin the pixels, you know, think about like quad bear where, you know, we're going to treat 4 pixels as 1 pixel. So bin versus line skip versus oversampled, obviously like oversampled is going to be the best.
Yeah.
And so if you can get something that shoots 4K 60 in an oversampled codec, it's just going to be a much cleaner image. And then I would say like bend and then line skipped.
Yeah.
If I was going to rank those.
Yeah. So. Cause at least binning is still factoring in the pixels, whereas line skipping is just totally throwing data away. So
yeah, definitely. All right, so my first option for you here is the Canon R3.
Coming out with a pretty expensive one there.
Yeah, that's a big camera too.
Yeah,
I think it's got like 3 grips on it.
For all 3 of your hands.
Yep, exactly. It's a left hand shooter grip.
Mm-hmm.
And that this thing can do 4K, or sorry, obviously 4K, so it can do 4.22 10-bit. And it's oversampled.
Yeah. I mean, I would expect nothing less from what is, you know, clearly one of Canon's flagship cameras.
Yeah. I mean, it's $4,700.
Yeah.
Like, this is what, like, you're going to find that any of the stacked sensor options are probably going to be the best ones.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other ones are where things start getting weird. So maybe a little too expensive.
Yeah. But it feels kind of out of the scope of the question.
Like, if you got the money for it.
Sure.
That's up there. But I would not do this one. I'm just going to skip straight over this one. If you're looking in the, you know, over $3,000 range, maybe closer to $4,000, I think you go straight for the Z8.
Mm, yeah, I think
camera of the year 2023.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty good option. When we've talked before about how good that camera is for video.
Yeah, I mean, the Z8, which is like $3,800 right now, that one can do oversamples from 8K. The R3 oversamples from 6K. But it'll do 4K 60 oversampled from 8K. And you can also shoot 4K 120 in a line skipped mode.
Interesting.
So even full width 4K 120,
wow.
If you needed to go even slower, but like slightly worse because it's line skipped.
Sure.
Other cool thing about the Z8 is you get that low ISO N log.
Mm, yeah, I forgot about that.
It'll do like ISO 80 or something,
wow.
in N log.
Yeah, that's pretty compelling. You may be able to get by with that without an ND filter.
Mm-hmm. They say that it doesn't impact noise. I don't know if that's true, but I think like what they're basically doing is they're taking where they're mapping middle gray and they're shifting that whole thing down.
Okay.
Like a few stops. And so it's like a little weird, but it's still kind of a cool feature.
Yeah.
The Z8 is a really fun hybrid camera. Like if you have the money and you're like cool with going Nikon, I like it a lot for hybrid mirrorless.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's almost $1,000 cheaper than the R3.
Yep. Sure is. Let's go $1,000 lower.
Okay.
And give me this next one on the list.
Well, I think I've seen this camera before. Fujifilm X-H2S.
Oh, yeah.
That hasn't come up on this podcast ever.
Mm-hmm. Camera of the year 2022.
Yep. Yep. I mean, it's still pretty compelling for this sort of option. It absolutely competes with everything else on this list.
It's still, still one of the best hybrid cameras you can buy. Because you can get 422 10-bit. You can shoot like ProRes. You can shoot ProRes internal. If you have an external recorder, you can shoot RAW, ProRes, or BRAW. And it'll do that 4K 60 oversampled from the 6K sensor.
Mm-hmm.
All internal. You can shoot all eye. It's not like long GOP.
Yeah. Very low rolling shutter.
Mm-hmm. Super fast.
We've talked about this, but I mean, there have been so few stacked sensor cameras.
Yeah.
It still feels like the X-H2S is one of the few.
Is it the only APS-C stacked sensor camera?
I think it might be. Yeah.
I can't think of another one.
But even among all sensors, like even including full frame, there aren't that many.
No, there's not that many. I mean, I'm not gonna sit here and just keep gushing over the X-H2S. No.
I think it's a really good option for this question because it's affordable. I mean, several of these other things we're talking about are, you know, far more expensive than this.
Mm-hmm.
And it does photos well. I mean, we're both really happy with it for photos, and it's a good option.
Yeah, I like it. I like that whenever you're shooting in 4K 30 or less, you can get the 14-bit readout off the sensor. And so you just get that extra bit of color information and dynamic range.
Yep.
And like legitimately looks better when you get the 14-bit readout. Yeah,
you can actually tell.
Yeah. And like you can just shoot open gate full width.
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Yep.
Anyway. Okay.
Enough about that.
Let's go back onto the Canon train.
Okay.
I'm going to need you to tell me, like, you're going to have to rank these when we're done, because I'm just, like, rolling through.
Yeah, we'll have to analyze this once we get through the options, I think.
Sure. Okay, so you got the R6 Mark II.
Okay, and that one came out a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm. And, like, hand in hand, you have the R6 Mark II, and you have the Canon R8. And the R6 Mark II Canon is $2,300. So it's, like, at this point, it's cheaper than an X-H2S.
Sure.
And they're basically the same price. And then the R8's like, what, like $1,300 or something?
Yeah, way cheaper.
They're basically the same sensor. The R6 II is just a lot better for like all the creature comfort things where it's like, it's got the wheel dial for the thumb. It's got a better EVF, but like two SD cards. I mean, like it's just a way better camera for like doing camera stuff. And I feel like if you're going to buy one or the other and you had $2,300, it's worth $1,000 to upgrade. And if you're going to like get into Canon world.
Yeah.
But if you're just trying to get cheap, then the 4K 60 for these ones is almost full width.
What is that, 1.07 times crop?
Yeah. It's just a little bit. And it's oversampled.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's 422 or 420. I think it's 422 10-bit. I feel pretty confident about that. But it's probably going to overheat.
Mm.
That's kind of like the main problem with these Canons is like you're going to get 20 or 30 minutes and then you're gonna have to stop.
Yeah, which honestly for a lot of use cases that's probably fine. So if you're shooting like a long form interview, why are you shooting at 60?
Yeah, I mean, sure. So, yeah, any long form stuff like that. Yes, 4K 60 is probably whenever you're looking to maybe slow things down.
Yeah, which it's hard to imagine you need to do that for too long, but it's good to be aware of that limitation.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm looking on here to see the other Canon options, and I think there's one more, and that's a C70,
okay,
which can do all eye 4K 60 and 4K 120
mm-hmm.
but, at 422 10-bit.
But that one, basically, like, the only photos you're taking on a C70 are sort of, like, it's a technicality.
You can take photos with the C70.
You can take photos, but if you're wanting a camera for 50% photos, I would not go with the C70.
That one's also like, what, $5,700
or
something?
Yeah.
I feel like none of the Canon options are great.
I agree.
Like the R3 is too expensive. The R6 and the R8, like with the overheating and the slack crop and like
Yeah, that feels a little
unless you just really want Canon lenses or Canon colors, don't love them. Yeah. And the C70 is really just a video camera.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like an option here.
So I think between all of the Canon cameras that we covered, I would go with the Nikon.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I would pick any of the Canons.
All right, let's talk about Sony.
Okay. So wait, Sony has a camera that meets these needs?
Like barely? Okay, they have like the A7S III and the ZV-E1. ZV-E1, right. Kind of, but like they have those cameras. I guess the FX3 would fall into that, but it's not a hybrid photo camera, right? So those will do 4K 60 10-bit 422 at 200 megabits per second.
Now, those still have a fairly low megapixel count. Is that right?
They're 12 megapixes.
Yeah, so just like the A7S II was, that's a little compromised on the photo side.
Yeah, so not as great for photo as some of these other options. You're not getting any oversampling because it's just doing pixel for pixel readout. But like it has a really good image, and I think like where these would shine is low light. So I mean, like they're not cheap, right? They're in that $3,500, $3,000 range.
Yep.
But it would think it would be really interesting to consider cross shopping like an A7S III, a Z8, and an XH2S.
Yeah, in that like $2,500 to $4,000 range, those would be some good options.
And like basically where I land on this is if you need low light and you're not really, really into resolution megapixels, then the Sony's the best option. Like you're going to get amazing high ISO performance and it's just going to be like a super, super good video camera.
Right.
But if you need something that has like the best data rates and maybe like the best color fidelity, and like really good rolling shutter performance, and you don't really need like full frame blow light, and you're just looking for something like right up the middle, that's the Fujifilm for you.
Yeah, I agree.
And then if you need like high resolution stills and like 8K footage, that's the Z8.
Yeah. Or, you know, and if a lot of your video is in brighter conditions, that low ISO log might actually be really helpful.
Oh, for sure. Definitely for that. So I think like they all have their very unique kind of like where they win.
Mm-hmm.
And I always land on the Fuji because it's like the cheapest and has the best all arounder. But
yeah, the Fuji's definitely the best all around out of those choices.
Yeah. Like spoiler alert, it's probably going to be my recommendation for this.
All right. So that's Sony.
Okay. Oh, no, there's one more. Sony's. I see. You can get an A6700.
Oh, and that does full
it'll
width.
It'll do oversampled full width 10-bit 422.
Interesting.
I think it's going to be the same codec. It's going to be about 200 megabits per second.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you're getting like the all intra like 320, 400 megabit per second that you get out of some of these other cameras. You're not going to get like ProRes internal, but like it'll be fine.
And that's one of the more affordable options in this list. It's probably around $1,300, $1,400, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's about $1,400. So, I mean, maybe for budget option, that's probably the best budget option. You're going to get some of those really cool Sony like vloggy features, and the autofocus is going to be really good, and like it gets you into E-mount. A 6700 is a pretty good option for
this. I agree.
Okay. I think that's all the Sony ones, except for the two most important ones, which is the A1, which like, no, like just cross it off the list. It's like, it's binned 4K 60 and it's like, it's just not good.
Yeah. Probably really shouldn't be buying the A1 at this point when the A9 III exists.
Yeah, definitely not. So like A1 is on the list because it hit the requirement. I would not consider it for this option. I think a lot of the other ones on here are better, like the Z8.
Yeah.
But the A9 Mark III.
Yep. Brand new camera.
Global sensor. You can shoot that all eye oversampled 4K 60. It's like 10-bit 422. You can shoot 4K 120.
Yep.
Yeah.
Pretty low rolling shutter on that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. But it's like, what, $6,000?
Oh, it's so expensive. Yeah. Plus, like, really bad high ISO performance.
Yeah. Probably not really a realistic option for this.
Yeah, probably not. It's a super cool option. Mm-hmm. That's like the Ferrari on this list.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, so I think that's all the Sonys.
I think you're right.
All right, so let's talk about Lumix.
Okay.
The S1R, not the S1H Mark II, because that one shoots cropped, but the S1R... you can buy for like $1,500. And that one will shoot a binned 4K 60 at 8-bit 420.
Well, that doesn't sound great.
And it's not exactly not cropped. It's like 1.09x.
You're not selling me on this.
It's not a good option. Basically, like you don't have any Lumix options unless you go Micro Four Thirds.
Yeah. And does anybody really want to go Micro Four Thirds?
I don't know. Maybe. Because like you got the GH5S. I mean, that's like the low light king, supposedly. Sure.
I don't, I mean, even the regular GH5, I don't think it had a crop. I don't quite remember. Maybe it did.
I don't, I mean, you're going to go GH5 now.
Yeah.
Because it's way better.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, sure, you'll lose the Ibis, I think, but.
True.
If you want the Ibis, you'll get the G9 too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do oversampled 422.
Or the GH6.
No. G9 too.
Yeah, it's newer at least. I don't know. I just, Micro Four Thirds, I mean, we've talked about this in the show before, but I have a hard time recommending Micro Four Thirds for most use cases at this point. I know there's some stuff where it does well. You know, if you want to take bird pictures with the sensor crop, like, I get that, but I feel like for most people, you just don't get enough value over something like a phone camera.
It's a hot take, Daniel.
Yeah. I mean, low light performance is terrible on those cameras.
I would say, like, I don't totally agree with you. I feel like there's still a good place for people for, like, an OM-1 Mark II.
But why? What would you... Why would... So you have that on the list here because it does 4K 60.
I sure do.
So justify that. Why would you pick an OM-1 Mark II for this over the other things we've suggested?
I definitely wouldn't because it's, like, super, super compromised. How much does an OM-1 Mark II cost? I literally searched it. Can't find it. There it is. It's $3,000.
Yeah, wait, did you say $3,000 or $30,000?
$3,000.
So, I mean, but why would I pick that over an X-H2S?
It's stabilization. It's got really, really good IBIS. Maybe, like, you're shooting something super far away. Yes, I mean, that's not really good. I mean, there's not a bunch of super, super, like, the longest lens is 600 millimeters, so eh. But maybe you want it to be small. It's got built-in sort of NDs. I don't know if those work for video. We gotta talk about that whole ND thing, Dan.
Yeah.
I want to do like a whole segment on this camera because the OM-1 Mark II came out like a month and a half ago. We haven't talked about it at all.
I know. Yeah, because nobody wants Micro Four Thirds anymore.
No, I've been moving it from like week to week. Like, mm-hmm. This is it.
Just hoping.
This is a week we're gonna talk about the OM-1 Mark II.
Not happening.
And we're gonna talk about how OM Systems took the Olympus badge off it and just like rebranded the
mm-hmm.
camera. It has a stacked sensor, Daniel. You're talking about all the stacked sensor cameras on this list?
Yeah, the cheaper Fuji X-H2S also has a stacked sensor.
And it's bigger.
Yeah.
Size isn't everything, Daniel.
I don't see a compelling reason to pick Micro Four Thirds.
I think like size and stabilization. I think that people love the OM-1 because it has the best weather sealing of any camera on this list.
Yeah. Okay.
It's really rugged. It's really great for travel. It's super small. Like if you just want a small little camera that's going to take super good pictures, like you can do like a 75, 80 megapixel, like, you know, composite shot and you handheld. You can just handhold it. Just boop, boop, boop. Here's an 80 megapixel still, this landscape. Awesome. I still wouldn't pick it. Because the 8-bit on this camera is not good.
And you can't do 10-bit? It's only 8-bit?
You can, but there's a catch. Like, the 8-bit is just, like, when you compare the 10-bit and the 8-bit, the 10-bit is, like, noticeably sharper and has way better color fidelity and, like, way better dynamic range. It's just better. But if you shoot in 10-bit, you have to shoot an OM log. You can't shoot in a Rec. 709 profile in 10-bit.
That's also frustrating.
And the histogram, when you're shooting in log, bases upon the log image on the screen, not the actual exposure.
Why would they do it that way?
And so if you want to shoot 10-bit, you have to shoot in log, but you can't use the on-camera histogram to know if your exposure is right. Oh, so you're looking at a flat image that you can't expose because you want to get the color right, and you're going to get them wrong anyway.
That's not good. It's not good.
It's not good, but it'll shoot oversampled 4K 60.
Yeah, I don't even know why you put that on this list. Terrible.
It's terrible. Hey, maybe Brad's out there like, I'm going to travel to Norway. I don't know. Like maybe he needs something that can like he can drop in the snow and he's real good at log.
Real good at log.
You know, I don't know. Okay. Yeah. So did I mention every camera on this list?
I think you got them all.
Okay.
Yeah. That's it. You covered them all.
For hybrid photo video that you can shoot full width 4K 60. Like I said, Daniel, you can have any of these. Like, don't even worry about how much it costs. You can just have it. Which one would you pick?
Well, I mean, this isn't for me. You know, if it was for me, I would probably pick the C70 and just use it for video. But if I needed something to use as a hybrid camera, I mean, I would, you know, this is like so on brand for this podcast, but I would be between the XH2S and the Z8 as the two options, because I think they're both really good. And I would pick the XH2S. I mean, it seems like it's the best all-around option for doing both photo and video. And it's affordable. I mean, Z8 is $1,000 more, and I don't feel like you get enough for that money.
You're telling me, well, if I just told you you have any of these for free, and you just left the A9 on the table.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I should have picked that. I don't know, but I still feel like the A9's compromised in some ways with stuff like the noise performance.
Yeah, high ISO and that sort of thing. Yeah. It's real expensive. It's such a cool camera.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, I know you said have it for free, but I can't help but consider pricing these things because, you know, even if somebody gave you one of these cameras, if you ever needed to replace it or something, you know, you can't help but think about the price when you're using a camera. And I mean, you want something that you can take on a trip with you, or, you know, and all that. And I mean, how good are you going to feel about taking a $6,000 camera on vacation? So,
yeah, I guess that's true. It really comes down to just to kind of like what you're shooting and how well that works.
Yeah.
You can shoot 4K 120 with an A6700. Wow.
It may not be uncropped.
Oh, it's like 1.58. It's like crazy crop.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. It's kind of S-cinetone.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the 6700 is not a bad option at the low end. Yeah. I mean, because a lot of people are not going to want to buy a $2,500 camera. $1,400 is still expensive, but it's at least, you know, it's more in a range that people consider. And I mean, the 6700 does meet that requirement.
Yeah, I feel like where I land on this is, like, for the budget options, you have the R8 and you have the 6700. Me personally, I would pick the Sony over the R8, even though it's crop versus full frame, like, because I'm not afraid of crop sensor cameras. But like, if you have to have full frame and you need the budget option, the Canon R8's right there.
Sure, that's true. Yeah, you get the overheating problems. The main.
Yeah, I don't love it for this. Like, it's not my first recommendation. It's not my third recommendation. But it's like, it is an option, mm-hmm. and I think it's still like a decent camera. I would still pick the 6700 over it.
Yeah.
I think, like, overall, I would land on the Fujifilm X-H2S for myself every time, just because, like, you get all those film simulations, you get the Fuji colors. Like, I really like the way the X-Trans sensor noise performs whenever you shoot. And, like, you can do it has so many of those features. Like, you can do the internal ProRes, you can shoot in RAW, you get all eye codecs up to, like, really, really good data rates. I think you can shoot, like, what, like 620 megabits per second?
720.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's like you can get so much good information, and like F-Log is a really good codec, and it has like all this dynamic range. It's so good. And so like for $2,500, you get a lot of camera, and like, yeah. I would pick that every time. If like, and I think I've said it before, like the Z8 is really enticing to me. I think that would be like the money's no object option, I think. Because like if you are truly doing like 50-50 hybrid, being able to shoot up to 48 megapixels is really nice.
Sure.
I mean, I've talked about on this podcast, like, I still would like to get an X-T5 at some point because I want more resolution for some of my photos. I would like to be able to do larger prints and that sort of thing. And like, that's 40 megapixels. I mean, the Z8's like, what is this, like 46 megapixels?
Yeah, I think it's somewhere in that range.
Yeah, 40 megapixels. So like, having that high resolution is really nice. Having that, if you're going to shoot like interviews, having that 8K option, you can do those crop ins. That's really nice. So I feel like that's the Z8's like my money's no object. I think the X-H2S, because you have to take budget into account. That one's my winner. And yeah, then my budget option is the A6700.
Yeah, makes sense. And I think that's a good rundown. I do think it reminds me of how you had to get a new car recently and you ended up getting the exact same car you had before.
You're just trying to like rip me here. It's just the concept of like sometimes when presented with all the same options and like you kind of like start working through like following the same patterns and like following the same logical steps, you end up at the same conclusion.
Yeah, that's how it seems.
And it's just really frustrating because sometimes you're like, well, I had this other car before, but I definitely want a different car. And so like, you just don't even put the first car on the list. And then you go look at all the other cars. And then this car salesman person's like, well, what if we drive the same car that you have, but like a newer version? You're like, well, I'm not going to like that. And then you're like, wow, this is actually way better for all these reasons. And it's like the best option for the money. And oh my gosh, I'm going to buy the same car in blue.
Yeah. That's all hypothetical, right? That's definitely not a real thing that happened.
I'm like, when I go to sleep at night, I'm just disappointed with myself. And I mean, like, I don't feel that way about the XH2S. Yeah.
Well, it's just interesting that, I mean, that camera came out, was it 2 years ago? It came out in 2022. Is that right? I think
that's correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be 2 years old this summer in June.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it, you know, and us on this podcast are still saying it's a great choice for a camera, and it holds up so well against, you know, some newer options and against basically what the entire market has done in, you know, almost 2 years.
I mean, if you think about camera releases, I mean, most of these companies are working on like a 3 to 4 year cycle for their product lines.
Yeah.
And where the XH2S released in within like the release of all the competition, everything on this list except for like the A9 Mark III is essentially in the same category.
Good point.
Even the OM-1 Mark II is just an OM-1 with Olympus taken off.
So it's like all the same generation of camera.
Yeah, basically. There's like some older stuff on here, like the GH5S and the S1R, sure, which were kind of like advanced for what they are. And like the C70 was just leaps ahead.
Yeah.
Like we're probably going to see a C50 or a C70 Mark II this year that is going to be absolutely nuts.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to blow all these cameras out of the water. But like all of the other stuff, I mean, the R6 Mark II came out later that same year. I mean, none of this stuff is really that much older than some of the other. I think that we're going to see a lot of really cool cameras come out in 2024 that maybe will supplant some of these options that we've talked about today as like the best uncropped 4K 60.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if we were to look back at this in a year, see if we still have the same answer.
Yeah. It would just be the XH3S.
Maybe so.
No, that's probably like what you said, 2022. That'll
be a couple years away.
2026 or something.
Yeah.
When the XH1 came out in the same year as the XT3, and it was embarrassing because XT3 was like just way better of a camera. That was 2019.
Okay, so then it was about
so it's 3 years.
3 years. Yeah. Well, I guess we'll see what happens.
Daniel, you know what that means.
I mean, you could be getting a new camera next year.
2025 XH3S.
Camera of the year 2025. Oh my gosh, calling it now.
Yep. Just think about it. Let's think about it for a minute. Maybe it'll come out with a new film simulation.
Oh, we got to stop this. We talked about Fuji last week. We can't be going off the Fuji.
What could they add? It would maybe be a stack. There's no way it's going to be a global sensor.
No, nope, nope, cutting you off.
They could do high resolution.
No, that's enough. Okay. That's it.
All right. So is that everything for this super cool topic?
Yeah, I think so. If you're listening to this and you want us to answer your question in way too much detail, then send us an email.
I don't think we went into enough detail. I feel like we could have dug into some of these cameras for like 20 minutes.
We probably could, but we did give them a lot of options.
Yeah, well,
there's things to think about.
Hopefully like one of those three is going to get him there.
Yeah. Yep, I think so.
Or maybe he'll just buy the R8. I don't know.
Nah, that could also happen. All right. Well, we're almost out of time, but there's one other thing I think we have to mention today because we've been waiting for this for a long time.
Woo.
And I was scrolling through my Facebook earlier, which I never do. And I saw an ad, and it was a targeted ad from Zoom, the audio recorder company. That is how I heard about this news, which is a little, little embarrassing, but here we are. So,
I mean, Facebook ads are working.
I guess so. So we talk about 32-bit float audio on this podcast here and there. We've talked about it a lot with the Wireless Labs. And I know something that we've both said is that we want to see Zoom update their handheld recorders with 32-bit float.
Okay, the amount of time we've spent talking about audio recorders on this podcast in the last 6 months is embarrassing.
Yes, it's getting to be a little...
It's been maybe like almost every other episode. I would say 25% of our episodes have been about audio gear.
I think you're right.
It's ridiculous.
We're going to have to rename the show.
Yeah. Camera and audio gear podcast. Yeah.
But we may be able to stop talking about the Zooms at least because they have finally released 32-bit float handheld recorders.
I am so pumped about this. Yeah. Like you have an H5N and I have an H4N Pro.
Yeah.
And those things are awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're so cool. It's like if you have mild audio recording requirements, like you never need more than two channels. You need something that has a very good onboard mic. You need to be able to run a lav into it or XLR or TRS or the non-split version, TR.
Yeah.
Like any of those things. You need to like run any of those into.
And you need it to be portable.
Yeah. And you need it to be portable. Like these Zoom Handy recorders are amazing.
Yeah.
And usually like they'll have three versions. They'll have like the H1, the H4, and the H6. And then like the H6 has four ports and the H4 has two ports, which is counterintuitive. And the H1 has none ports.
Yeah.
So also counterintuitive. Yeah. But like they've made these things for a while. And I bought my H4N used for like $150 or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been amazing. Like you can plug a USB cable into it and use it as a like an audio input device for your computer.
Yep.
And like I'll run mics into my computer using the H4 because like you can just use it as an interface.
And we also use it as backup audio. Every time we do an interview, we plug a XLR shotgun mic into it and mm-hmm. use it as our backup.
Yeah. These things are great. Yep. They're like super, super handy. And doesn't the H stand for handy?
Yeah.
I don't know. It might as well. It does though, right?
I think it does. Okay. I think it actually does.
All right. So like they've been great. And like Zoom does have 32-bit stuff, right?
Yeah,
like,
the F3, the F6, F8. Yeah, some of their and just like more pro-level field recorders.
The F3 is the one that you can like strap to your wrist or strap to a pole.
Yeah.
Or you can wear like an armband.
That's right.
Can you get one long enough so you can put it on your head?
Like a headlamp, but it's an audio recorder?
I mean, maybe. You can have a really short cable to your headphones. That way, like, you know, sometimes when you're wearing, like, wired headphones, like, the cable is kind of just, like, around. It's, like, catching on things. If you had a Zoom F3 on your head, you could have, like, a little 6-inch cable and just, like, whoop.
I don't know about this.
It's perfect.
Yeah.
This is almost as good as my baton wand idea.
I don't think so.
You're right. I mean, that idea was better.
Yep.
This one's still pretty good.
So these recorders.
Yep. What's important about this, Daniel?
Well, the name is changed. So now they're the H1 Essential and the H4 Essential and the H6 Essential.
I'm going to be honest with you. Whenever you sent this to me and you're like, hey, Lucas, a new H4 Essential. I was like, call me back when it says Pro.
Yeah. It's kind of an interesting naming choice, honestly. It's really long, which I don't understand why, but I don't know. It seems...
Maybe they're leaving room for the Pro?
Maybe.
Maybe they're trying to rebrand?
Could be. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
It matters, Daniel. To me, Essential is not as Pro as Pro, and I need these to be Pro.
Well, the pricing is about the same as they were before. So the H1 Essential is $99, the H4 Essential is $199, and the H6 Essential is $299. So that pricing is right about in line. I think the H4N was about $200 new. So,
yeah, no, that's correct. Yeah, the H4 has typically been $200.
Yeah. So, I mean, biggest headlining feature is 32-bit float recording. So, you can record and not to worry about clipping. But some other things that are interesting about these, one is that they have better displays. So you actually get an OLED screen,
ooh,
which is much better than the little LCD thing that they had before, you know, higher resolution and all that.
My H4N Pro might as well be an analog watch.
Yeah. Yep.
An analog watch? Like a crystal display digital watch
mm-hmm.
from like 1983.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a backlight.
Yep. And so that's one thing that's improved. And kind of along with that, they show a waveform whenever you're recording. So the F3 does this, the F6 does it. And, you know, so I guess it's like their new software platform that lets them do 32-bit float. You know, they're bringing that to this. And so you actually get a little waveform, which is, you know, way easier to monitor, I think, than looking at the meters. So I
love
like that.
It. Love it. Yep. Does it have a jog wheel like a BlackBerry?
I don't think it does.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna miss that.
One thing I thought was funny though is a feature that I really like on my H5 that you don't have on the H4 is that the H5 has actual gain knobs on it.
Yeah, it does.
And I like that a lot.
10 out of 10 for that.
And I was disappointed when I saw this H4 because it doesn't have that. And but then Daniel, I realized that doesn't matter as much.
It doesn't it not have gain at all?
I don't know how that works with 32-bit float because I've never used a 32-bit float recorder. But I mean, at the very least, you're not going to be riding the gain knob like you might on a regular recorder because 32-bit float is just not going to clip. So, yeah.
Whenever I was looking at this earlier, I was looking at it on B&H and it says no level adjustment needed 32-bit float.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
I'm just saying, like, maybe you take the knobs off because you don't need knobs anymore.
Well, I definitely think that's why the knobs aren't there. I just don't know if you have a button to adjust something, but that's kind of cool. And then another thing is they support a Bluetooth adapter for $40. Now, I think some of the other recorders support this. I know the field recorders do. But what this lets you do is, one thing, you can remote control the recorder and monitor it from your phone. So that could be pretty cool. If you want to set it up somewhere and then you're on the other side of the set, you can use your phone to start the recording, or you could even just monitor levels from your phone. Kind of neat. And it also allows it to support Bluetooth time code. So
Daniel, it supports the Atmos Blue.
It does.
Daniel.
Yep.
Daniel.
Yep.
Have you bought this?
No.
Did you pre-order it?
No.
Oh my gosh.
So
have you not bought this yet?
Well, you don't have to pre-order it, because if you get on B&H, you're going to be like, Daniel, you have to pre-order because it says end of March. But if you get on Zoom's website, you can order this right now and it will ship on Monday.
Oh my gosh. Adding to cart.
Yep.
But Daniel, I want to use my PayBoo.
Yeah. So B&H looks like they already have the H1 in stock, and it looks like they're planning to get the 4 and the 6 by the end of March. So not that long to wait.
It's going to be really hard not to buy this.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like a huge upgrade. And for you, so my H5 is better than your H4.
How dare you?
The problem that we have with yours,
because it has a higher number. Is that why?
It feels like we have to boot that thing up 10 minutes before we need it, because it takes so long to process the SD card.
Daniel, this one has like 16 more bits. I mean, or 8 more bits. I can't do math. Right. Wait, no. How many bits does mine have?
Yours is 24,
right? Okay. Yeah. This has 8 more bits. It's probably going to take 30% longer.
It supports, I think they support micro SD cards up to 1 terabyte in size.
Oh, my, this is so good. Yeah. It's so much better than my stupid H4N Pro.
Yeah. I think you're at the point where you should upgrade, and you do use that H4N Pro so much that I think it makes sense.
Like, we've been talking about this whole time code thing and how like we have to get this other whole time code thing just to make the blue things work. This is cheaper than the other time code thing.
Yeah.
Like, I could just buy this and then both things support the blue thing.
Yep.
And then I just buy the blue thing and we're set.
Yep. That's right.
It's perfect.
I'm glad you're so excited about this.
I'm crying. I couldn't be happy.
Yeah.
I haven't even bought it yet, Daniel.
I think these came out around the beginning of February. They were announced then, I should say. I mean, B&H hasn't gotten them yet, so they are still new. But yeah, this is, I would say, overdue. It's been clear over the past 2 years or so that Zoom has just steadily been updating their entire lineup. They've, you know, they started with the field recorders, and then they've released some stuff that's more for musicians. And, you know, the time has come. They finally started updating the consumer, you know, like handy recorder product line. And I'm here for it.
Daniel, I know what you're doing.
What am I doing?
Like, this episode is going to release on like Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And once it goes out and people hear us talking about this, this is going to be like the X106, where like it's just
going to run on the pre-orders.
Yeah, there's going to be so many orders. I won't be able to get one for like a year.
So you're what?
You're basically making it so that I have to order this by Monday or else.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing else I can do. You forced my hand.
And you're so upset about it.
Jeez, I just can't handle it. I'm going to, like, you know what this means? I could retire my M Audio interface that I bought in like 2009 that still powers my desktop monitors. And I could replace that with my H4N Pro and then just leave that plugged in forever.
Good point.
Take those batteries out of it that have probably leaked acid by now. And then I could replace the H4N with this thing.
Yeah.
And it would be perfect.
It would.
In every way.
Yep. Wouldn't have to worry about the levels on recordings anymore.
Oh my gosh, I'd buy the time code thing. Oh, this is really good. Man, of all the audio gear we've talked about.
Of which there has been many.
There has been a lot. I don't know how anybody does anything without one of these. Like, I know that like everyone has their own audio solution, but I mean, if your production level is like, you know, a 2-man crew or less, and you're recording audio, these things are amazing.
Yeah. And these look like huge upgrades. I'm like unreasonably excited about the screen. Yeah. You know, like it's
fantastic.
Yeah. Like, it's a huge upgrade.
I mean, like being able to see the waveform, that's super cool. Sorry, I'm like really, really pumped about this.
Mm-hmm.
I also didn't know that that this existed for some reason. Like somehow we both missed it.
I don't know how we missed it. I feel like, I mean, I look at websites like Petapixel and No Film School pretty often. And I would think I would have seen this. And so I don't know if it's just kind of slipped under people's radar or what, but this is really exciting.
Well, now it's not going to, because we're talking about it.
Yeah, we've gotten the word out.
Which, like, Well, not yet, because I got to buy one of these things first. Oh, man, this is great.
Yeah.
32-bit float. I'm like looking at a picture of it.
Yeah, you're just sitting over there smiling.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about it right now. Yep. Just thinking about how I'm going to get one of these things. Yeah. I don't know. This is great.
Yeah, it really is.
There's nowhere for us to go from here, Daniel. This is it.
I think you're right.
Oh, well, that was what I was going to say.
No, we can't peak. You can't peak with 32-bit float. It's not possible. That's it for the show today. Thanks for joining us. And if you liked it, tell a friend so they can check it out too. You can find out more about the show at www.cameragearpodcast.com. And you can find us on Twitter @CameraGearPod. We'll be back with more next week.